Today's Monday, September 1st. This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, Hurricane Dorian slams into the Bahamas as a life-threatening Category 5 storm, and its path is still uncertain.
Just a devastating, powerful, historic hurricane here.
Environmentalists say Trump administration proposed policies will make it harder to fight storms like Dorian as the planet warms. Also ahead, U.S. farmers are growing increasingly frustrated as they lose profits over a lingering trade war with China. It's all on today's International Edition. Hurricane Dorian crashed into the Bahamas Sunday as the strongest Atlantic storm on record and was forecast to move dangerously close to Florida in the next 2 days. The U.S. National Hurricane Center said Dorian made landfall as a catastrophic Category 5 storm with maximum sustained winds of 295 kilometers per hour and gusts of more than 354 kilometers per hour, ripping off roofs, overturning cars, and tearing down power lines as hundreds took refuge in schools, churches, and shelters. Silbert Mills, who owns the Bahamas Christian Network TV and radio stations, says Hurricane Dorian is like nothing he has ever seen there.
The ocean waves are crashing on the shoreline. Salt air is salt sea is just spraying onto our houses. Winds are howling like we've never, ever experienced before. And this is everything, including the kitchen sink, that Hurricane Dorian has to throw at us.
National Hurricane Center Director Ken Graham says Dorian is forecast to remain a hurricane for the next 5 days.
This thing's slowing down in the forecast, and that's just going to compound the issues in the Bahamas. That means major hurricane force winds for a prolonged period of time, 30 hours to 36 hours or so. That's a long time.
Graham says residents of the Bahamas should not venture out into Dorian's well-defined eye should it pass overhead. Millions of people in the eastern United States, from Florida to North Carolina, are also bracing for Dorian's possible landfall or for the storm to veer north into the Atlantic Ocean. Parts of Florida have been evacuating, and Georgia and the Carolinas are also preparing for high winds and flooding.
Anybody that goes out in the eye, just don't. It's too dangerous. There's debris, and there's also the other side of the eye wall on the way. So a very dangerous situation with time.
As Hurricane Dorian gathered strength, nonprofit groups have been worried about vulnerable populations who tend to have fewer resources to be ready for a major hurricane. Another mass shooting over the weekend in the United States. At least 7 people are dead and more than 20 injured in West Texas. That happened Saturday, including a 17-month-old girl who was shot in the face. 3 police officers were also wounded. President Trump and Texas's Republican governor say action is needed, though neither is offering details. AP correspondent Ben Thomas reports.
I'm tired of the dying.
That's Texas Governor Greg Abbott after another mass shooting, this one playing out between Odessa and Midland Saturday afternoon.
The status quo in Texas is unacceptable. And action is needed.
At the federal level, President Trump told reporters Sunday he's working with both Democrats and Republicans in Congress to determine what that might look like. But as for tighter background checks,
they would not have stopped any of it. So it's a big problem. It's a mental problem. It's a big problem.
And Texas's Republican governor says any action must also
safeguard Second Amendment rights.
Even as Abbott spoke, a number of looser gun laws he signed this year were taking effect on the 1st of September.
On August 3rd, a gunman also killed 22 people in another shooting on a Saturday at a Walmart store in the city of El Paso, Texas. Here are some of the stories we are following at VOAnews.com. The Saudi-led airstrikes have killed at least 100 people in the rebel-run prison. New U.S. and China tariffs have taken effect on each other's exports. Hong Kong protesters block roads near the airport again Sunday. And why Americans don't wear white after Labor Day. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. The pro-Iranian Lebanese group Hezbollah fired several anti-tank missiles at an Israeli army base and a military ambulance, but there were no casualties, according to the Israeli army. The army said several of the missiles struck their targets, and Israel fired dozens of mortars at Hezbollah targets in southern Lebanon. Linda Gradstein reports for VOA from Jerusalem.
For the past week, Israel has been bracing for a Hezbollah attack since an Israeli airstrike that targeted what Israel said was an Iranian plot to bomb northern Israel with armed drones. That attack killed several Iranian fighters, including two members of Hezbollah, and Hezbollah leader Hassan Nasrallah had threatened retaliation. That came with several anti-tank missiles fired at northern Israel that hit an army base and a military ambulance, but did not cause casualties. Hezbollah said the target was an armored personnel carrier, and there were injuries. In a news conference with the visiting president of Honduras, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu looked relieved that the Hezbollah strike had not caused casualties. He said that Israel responded to the attack and that he has ordered the army to be ready to respond to any scenario. An army spokesman said Israel had launched more than 100 airstrikes at Hezbollah targets in southern Lebanon. Lebanese Prime Minister Saad al-Hariri asked the international community to intervene to stop the attacks. Yair Golan, a former deputy chief of staff and current Knesset member, said Hezbollah did not want a war with Israel. He said that Hezbollah has fired anti-tank missiles before and that it does not want to escalate the situation further. The clash comes a little more than 2 weeks before Israelis go to the polls for the second time this year. Netanyahu was not able to form a coalition after the April election, but hopes he will succeed this time. Linda Gradstein for VOA News, Jerusalem.
While millions of people continue to live under a prolonged security lockdown in Indian-controlled Kashmir, villagers near the border on the Pakistani side of the disputed territory complain of intensified military skirmishes between the two countries and how they are also impacting their routine life. Ayaz Gul reports from the border town of Chakoti.
Residents and shopkeepers in this poverty-stricken border area say military clashes have escalated since early August when India revoked constitutionally provided autonomy for its part of Kashmir. Until a month ago, around 200 students used to come to this Islamic school in the Chakoti border area in Pakistani-administered Kashmir. But less than a dozen are here now.
Parents are terrified due to the exchange of fire, and they have stopped sending their children to the school. So certainly education activities have been badly affected.
Most of the people here are also outraged at Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi for altering the status of India's only Muslim majority region.
Modi is being really unfair to them and subjecting them to the worst kind of oppression. They have been confined to their homes and are hardly left with any food because it has been more than 24 days now.
The Indian action to cancel the special status for Kashmir was accompanied by a wide-ranging curfew and communications blackout. Thousands of people, including political leaders and activists, have been arrested without being charged. Kashmiris have protested in response, but the Indian government defends its action in Kashmir as important for the region's development. Pakistan is demanding India reverse course. On Friday, tens of thousands of Pakistanis took to the streets in solidarity with residents of Indian-administered Kashmir. Speaking at a rally in Islamabad, Prime Minister Imran Khan vowed to stand with the Kashmiris until they get freedom.
Kashmiris are passing through testing times. We fully share their pain and sufferings.
Pakistani military officials reject Indian claims that militants are attempting to infiltrate the border to fuel trouble in Indian Kashmir. The town of Chakoti, until recently, used to bridge Indian and Pakistani Kashmir via the Friendship Bridge. But for now, that bridge is empty because Pakistan has ordered the route closed. Ayaz Gul for VOA News, Chakoti, Pakistani Kashmir.
The Trump administration has proposed another reversal of an environmental protection rule put in place by former President Barack Obama's administration. And joining us now to talk more about this is David Doniger, Senior Strategic Director of Climate and Clean Energy with the Natural Resources Defense Council. So the Trump administration has proposed rescinding Obama-era limits on oil and gas industry emissions of methane, known to be one of the main pollutants scientists say is linked to climate change. What is your organization's stance on this?
The methane emissions from the oil and gas industry are very serious climate-changing pollutants, and they're also very easy to control, to curb. But it's inexplicable that the administration wants to roll back these very sensible limited requirements that are already in effect and already being complied with. The real issue is that the current requirements touch only the newer oil and gas operations, ones that started after 2015. And the existing law requires that EPA establish standards for the older operations, which represent about 90% of what's going on and what's releasing this dangerous pollution. So the real goal here is to shield the existing operations from the law's requirements. And they're doing that by trying to roll back the perfectly sensible requirements that are already in place for the new sources.
It's interesting because it's, of course, coming at a time when we see very serious things happening on the planet with the Amazon rainforest burning and Greenland with the ice melting at very dire pace, and climate change obviously happening already, not something in the future. Can the Environmental Protection Agency, as it's called, do this without congressional approval if the president orders this?
Hurricane Dorian is barreling down on Florida. And while the Amazon and the Arctic are on fire, the Trump administration is thumbing its nose at the idea of doing anything to curb dangerous climate change. And what they have proposed, first of all, will have to go through public comment. It will take them about a year to sift through that public comment. And if they finish this rule the same as they have proposed it, we will take them to court. What they're doing is illegal, and they will lose.
Do they need to be able to prove that there is some sort of environmental benefit to do something like this, in which case it would seem unlikely?
Well, it's really the other way around. There is an environmental rule in place limiting the methane pollution, at least partly, from the new sources. They have to prove it's not needed in order to lift it. They have to prove that there was something wrong with it in order to lift it. They can't do that. In fact, the law requires them to take the next step, which is to put limits on the pollution from the oil and gas industry's existing operations, which make up 90% of the operations and 90% of the pollution from that industry.
The Trump administration is also proposing logging in protected rainforest in Alaska, in the Tongass Forest. Is that also something that you all are keeping an eye on and that is pretty serious?
We oppose the logging in this old growth rainforest. These trees are hundreds and hundreds of years old. They lock up a lot of carbon dioxide that otherwise would be in the atmosphere. They're capturing more every day, every year. And at the time when the forests in the Arctic and the forests in the Amazon are on fire, it's inexplicable that the Trump administration would propose to cut down some of the oldest, most beautiful, most productive, most climate-protecting forests that we still have.
Is this also something that would need to go through a long process of public opinion and legality stuff?
Yeah. In each case, the president can't just snap his fingers and order something done. They've tried that a few times in the last couple of years, and the courts have slapped them down because you have to follow the same rules to tear the buildings down that apply to build the buildings up. You have to make proposals, seek public comment, answer the public comment, make a final decision, and then defend your actions in court, where the judges get to determine whether the law has been followed or has been disobeyed. Now, any administration gets a pretty wide berth from the courts, but this administration has been losing at an unprecedented rate these court cases, because what they're doing, not just in environment, but in so many other areas, is just blatantly illegal and disrespectful of the laws on the books. They can't get the laws changed, so they just violate the law. And one of the beauties of our system is that people can go to court and hold the president and his minions to account when they violate the law.
That's David Doniger, Senior Strategic Director of Climate and Clean Energy with the Natural Resources Defense Council. Well, given the latest wildfires in the Arctic and Amazon and this monster hurricane approaching the eastern U.S., environmentalists say it's the latest blow to the climate crisis. This, as Pope Francis is urging governments to take drastic steps to deal with climate change and says it's time to abandon dependence on fossil fuels. AP correspondent Charles de Ledesma reports.
Francis issued the appeal in a message to the faithful at the start of several weeks of prayer by Christians to raise political awareness about pollution and exploitation of natural resources. He also wants people to reflect on thoughtful and harmful daily decisions about consumption and self-centered attitudes towards creation. Francis said that at the UN Climate Action Summit later this month, governments will have the responsibility of showing the political will to take drastic measures to achieve as quickly as possible zero net greenhouse gas emissions. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
And you are listening to International Edition on VOA.
Voice of America's news, talk, and music programs are now at the tip of your fingers. Find everything at www.voaafrica.com. Listen to VOA's program lineup live anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcasts. Check VOA Mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA Newsfeed. VOAnews.com.
On Our Voices, we're talking about the news and issues you're talking about.
Sharing stories of development and growth across Africa, around the world, and in our lives. Topics that inform, empower,
and change the rules.
It's time for Our Voices with me, Haiti Adams Fitzpatrick,
and Hadiza Kiari,
and Ayan Bior,
and Orion Itangi Shaka.
Join us on Facebook at VOA Our Voices.
It's time for Our Voices.
VOA's International Edition continues. Well, in 2018, the United States reached an agreement with Mexico and Canada, two of its biggest trading partners, to replace the 1994 North American Free Trade Agreement, or NAFTA. The new USMCA trade agreement is billed as more balanced and reciprocal, but as VOA's Kane Farabaugh reports, the lack of a vote in the U.S. Congress to ratify the agreement is a source of frustration for U.S. farmers.
The biannual Farm Progress Show in Decatur, Illinois, one of the largest agricultural shows in the world, provides an opportunity to get a look at the latest and greatest trends in the industry. But this year, it's also a venue for U.S. farmers to raise their voices in the debate over international trade.
It's important for farmers in Illinois to understand how important the export markets are to their profitability. We export more corn out of this state than any other state does.
Tricia Braid's Illinois Corn Growers Association transformed their display tent at this year's show into an exhibit on the importance of the United States-Mexico-Canada, or USMCA, trade agreement.
In the decade that I've been working with the corn growers, this is the first time this action here at the Farm Progress Show has focused on trade.
We are texting, emailing our congressmen today, asking them to vote yes.
Part of that action is registering farmers on site to a network that will let them air their concerns directly with their lawmakers.
We have a call to action campaign. We're using a phone-based system. When they sign up, then they'll be able to be directly contacted to their members of Congress and the senators to ask them to ratify USMCA as soon as they come back from the August recess.
For Southern Illinois farmer Jim Rabin, the guaranteed access to markets in Canada and Mexico and the impact on prices the USMCA can provide is even more important this year, as wet weather during the planting season jeopardized crop production.
For our area and probably for our farm, probably 20-25% that prevent plants. And then there was also failed acres later on that either they were underwater or for whatever reason, but another 10%.
Like most farmers, Rabin is frustrated by uncertainty created by current U.S. policy and says other buyers, such as China, are looking at the USMCA as an example of U.S. trade reliability.
To me, it's a no-brainer. It should have already been passed. If it wasn't for politics, it would have been passed.
I believe today if it were put on the floor of the House, it'd get a majority of both caucuses. It's a great agreement and very much needed for the U.S.
Is the president- U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue told those he met with at the Farm Progress Show he understands their concerns and wants the USMCA trade agreement passed quickly. However, speaking with reporters alongside members of the Illinois congressional delegation, he said the fate of the agreement is out of the hands of the Trump administration.
Congress has to ratify this. These guys behind me know that. But it is the Speaker of the House who has to introduce that.
When and if it will be introduced when Congress reconvenes in September continues to add to the uncertainty farmers face in a season many say is already filled with too much of it. Kane Faribault, VOA News, Decatur, Illinois.
Valerie Harper, who stole hearts as Rhoda Morgenstern on back-to-back hit sitcoms in the 1970s, has died at the age of 80. In March of 2013, she revealed that she'd been diagnosed with terminal brain cancer. She'd battled lung cancer in 2009, and her husband manager said that recently he had been advised to place her in hospice. AP correspondent Margie Sarzaletta has details.
Valerie Harper said that fans were so happy to see her that they'd treat her like a relative or a best friend. She won 4 Emmys for playing Rhoda on TV in the 1970s. In the 1980s, she played Valerie Hogan on Valerie, later named Valerie's Family and the Hogan Family, when her character was killed off after a salary dispute. Harper told the Associated Press in 2006, Rhoda opened so many doors for her.
I'm just very grateful for Rhoda. She was the wind in the sails of my career.
I'm Archie Zaraletta.
With another mass shooting over the weekend here in the United States and 7 families grieving over loved ones they will never see again, we are ending the show today with a moment of reflection. Saturday's mass shooting was the 25th in the United States so far this year, and the 2nd in Texas in 4 weeks. And so far, nothing has been done to reverse gun violence in America, despite statistics showing no other Western nation coming close to the numbers of shootings in the U.S. So we leave you here today with a message from Teddy Pendergrass. And we are sending our thoughts and prayers to the victims' families, knowing all too well that thoughts and prayers may not be enough to end what is becoming all too familiar.
Oh, wake up all the teachers, time to teach a new way. Maybe then they'll listen to what you have to say. They're the ones who's coming up and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children to jump the
fence. And you have been listening to International Edition. That does it for our show today, but you can find us anytime at voanews.com. We thank you for listening, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Zainab Abdulrahman. Have a peaceful day.
We gotta change it now, just you and me. Wake up all the doctors, make the old people well. They're the ones who suffer and who catch all the hair. They don't have so very long before their judgment day. So won't you make them happy before they pass away? Wake up all the builders, time to build a new land. I know we could do it if we all lend a hand. The only thing we have to do, put it in our minds. Surely things will work out. They do it every time. The world won't get no better if we just let it be. The world won't get no better. We gotta change it now, just you and me. Change again, just you and me. change it, yeah. Change it, do it alone, do it alone. Need some help, y'all, y'all. Can't do it alone, do it alone.
Join host Larry London.
Larry London!
On Border Crossings, VOA's only worldwide music request hour.
Whoa.
Every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in for the biggest hits and amazing artists. Win prizes and get the latest news from exclusive celebrity interviews.
Ooh.
Send your requests to Facebook at VOA Larry London, Twitter at Border Crossings, or Instagram at Border Crossings VOA, or call 202-619-2077 and have your favorite music played to the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal, only on The Voice of America.
Next, an editorial reflecting American ideals and institutions.
September 1st marks the formal start, 80 years ago, of the Second World War. The six-year conflict was one of the most consequential events in human history. Its legacy is still enormously felt today. Many of the events that took place during the war were unprecedented. To begin with, unlike the First World War, which was fought mainly in Europe, the Second World War was truly global. It was also the most destructive conflict in history. It cost more money, damaged more property, killed more people, and caused more far-reaching changes than any other war in history. Although its exact cost in human lives is unknown, we do know that on average between September 1, 1939 and September 2, 1945, 27,000 people were killed each day. The total number of casualties on both sides totaled between 60 to 80 million service personnel and civilians killed. 6 million of these were the victims of the Holocaust, Jews who were murdered by the Nazi regime and its collaborators solely because they were Jewish. Millions of others also died in Nazi concentration camps, but never before in human history had genocide, the annihilation of an entire people, been implemented as government policy, despite the fact that it brought no economic, territorial, or political advantage. When the war ended in 1945, the world lay in ruins. Some 4% of the global population had been killed, and with peace, the horrors and atrocities of the war came to light. Hoping to stabilize the world and ultimately prevent another such cataclysm, Allied leaders set up a new international system of norms and ideals, conceived to ensure peace, security, and prosperity for all nations. This included the establishment of the United Nations, which in 1947 adopted the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, the establishment of the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank to ensure economic stability, and the North Atlantic Treaty Organization to counter the new threat rising from a former ally. Indeed, the Cold War between the Soviet Union and Eastern Bloc on one side and the Western powers on the other was a dominant factor for the next half a century, giving rise to a competition between the adversaries that resulted in the nuclear arms race, the space race, and the threat of a nuclear war. Commemoration of the events of the Second World War are important for reminding us that it is up to each new generation to ensure that the peace and prosperity purchased so dearly with the blood and suffering of millions is extended to future generations.
That was an editorial reflecting American ideals and institutions.
This is